You're with John Cleary on ABC Local Radio.
You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio around Australia through Radio Australia and via the web to the world. John Cleary with you. Time now to look at some of the signs of the times with church newspaper editors around the world. This evening we're joined by Paul Handley, editor of probably the most venerable institution in church newspaper circles, the Church Times of England. Paul Handley, welcome to Sunday night.
Good evening.
Paul, the big issue, or the big news, I should say, around the world, and particularly in London this week, celebrating the 400th anniversary of the King James Bible.
It's been wall-to-wall King James, really. Of course, it's slightly awkward because we've always known it as the authorised version until the turn of the year, and suddenly it's the King James. I think this is to appeal to the Americans. But I had no idea that it would take off right across the country. So there have been television series, there's been books, any number of events. Very exciting, really. It just shows how well respected and how well loved that version of the Bible is.
And it's interesting that it's even been taken up by such noted anti-theists as Christopher Hitchens.
Yes, well, the workings of the anti-theists are always very difficult to follow. In a sense, that gives a clue, I think, to its popularity, is that the language does transcend perhaps the sort of Christian tribalism that we get a little complacent about, and that more people are familiar with it than straightforward churchgoers.
I understand that in London it was celebrated by a number of events, including such diverse things as a reading at the Globe Theatre of perhaps the entire Bible over a few days, and then at the Albert Hall, where the Prime Minister, the Archbishop of Canterbury and others gathered to celebrate the event.
That's right, and all over the country there are bits, and they stretch throughout the year. I went to something early on to launch things at the Banqueting House in London. There was vast amounts of champagne, more than you would normally find at a church gathering, and great actors and statesmen and politicians and so on. Yes, it seems to have been adopted by British society.
It's a way in which the church really is established as part of British culture rather than just perhaps the formal legal establishment of the church, in that the King James and perhaps Shakespeare are regarded as really shaping what Britain has contributed to the world in a rather profound sense.
Yes, and that worries some people in the church. I mean, it doesn't worry me because I love the language and have I find memorizing anything difficult, so I cling to the version which is the most easily memorable. But there are people who say, well, is this making the Bible and Christianity just part of the heritage business? And there is a danger that the Bible is associated with 16th, 17th century England rather than 1st century Palestine. It's a reasonable argument, and so the content of the Bible has maybe been taking second place to the style and the language of it. But I think it can't be a bad thing to have so many people talking about the Bible and being exposed to it.
Well, let's move to the question of the content, particularly the Bible's role as a civilizing or civilizational influence. Many people have raised Christian principles in terms of the discussion of the big society in England and the way welfare cuts stemming out of the GFC and other things have been linked to a conservative vision of the way society should operate. The impact of this has led to direct cuts in welfare services, a realignment of the way welfare services have been dispensed, and of course some of the largest demonstrations in London since Margaret Thatcher and the poll tax riots.
Yes, and the marches were dismissed even as they were happening by government ministers saying they wouldn't be diverted from the path they had to take. One hopes that they took note of the amount of concern there is, because still the the government line is that these cuts can be made without too much damage done to the fabric of society. The church, which is more involved in the poorer bits of this country, says not, and says there is evidence already of deprivation which is being ignored and unsolved by these cuts. And I've got family members who work for a local council. I've got somebody who works in the health service, and right across the board, important bits are suffering.
The argument from some is that, well, look, the churches could benefit from the outsourcing of welfare, and that the churches then once again become the dispensers rather than the government of these things, and that, of course, will work to help the churches, put the churches back at the centre of community life.
I think there's only a very few people who think that, in that I call them the empire builders, really, who want the church to be indispensable. It's a foolish a foolish way of thinking, in that churchgoers are ordinary members of society. They're not sitting around waiting for people to come to them asking for the vast wealth that the church has, because A, there is no vast wealth, and B, everybody in this country, and I'm sure in Australia, is working hard to make a living, much more so than even 5 or 10 years ago. There is no vast pool of voluntary work. I mean, the church is doing tremendous things already, working alongside the government. Quite a lot of government funds have been channeled through church charities in the last few years, so that's already happening. There's no great prospect of redoubling or vamping up the church's efforts to take over from various state-run things.
Have the offices of the Archbishops of Canterbury or York made any sort of official pronouncement on this area?
When the Big Society was first mooted after the Conservatives won the election last year, there were some expressions of interest and concern, I think, because I think there's a general feeling that the cohesion of the society works well if there is more voluntary work, that the churches are involved, if charities and different societies are more involved in decision making and action. But as the cuts have bitten, the expressions of interest have dulled, and the expressions of concern have become more pointed. And certainly the noises from the Archbishop and the bishops, who are in the House of Lords, of course, are now extremely worried about what's going to be happening.
And this debate has some way to run. Perhaps we can pick that up again in future. Of course, there's a much deeper problem in the Middle East. We're watching a sort of Arab Spring, according to some, or a rerun of the Arab Revolt, according to others, unfold across the Middle East. Behind this, of course, are Christian communities in many of those countries. And that for the church, particularly the Anglican church, which is a strong expression in those Christian communities in those countries, is of some concern.
It is indeed. And we're fortunate. We have a Middle Eastern correspondent who is quite close to... it's very useful having somebody who speaks Arabic, for example, and he's aware of the tensions that exist and the anxieties in the Christian churches in places like Egypt or Yemen or in and around Israel. So we are aware that the Christian churches are hugely anxious about the lack of security that's following some of these revolutions, which I think we have to call them, and that there are clearly elements within Islam which find the presence of Christian churches difficult. We saw that with the attacks on churches in Egypt before the revolution took place. We've not had much evidence of that since, and certainly there are lots of expressions from Muslims that they're very happy to have Christians in their midst.
There have already been concerns about Iraqi churches as well.
Yeah. Yes, well, we talked this week to Andrew White, who's known as the Vicar of Baghdad, this English Anglican canon who shuttles backwards and forwards from the safety of England to the danger of Baghdad to look after his congregation there. And he still sees many Iraqis trying to leave the country because they feel so unsafe.
Of course, it does have that wider implication too, that that Christianity as a faith will disappear from its home turf, the very communities which for which it's existed for much of its 2,000-year history.
That's true. Of course, Christianity doesn't have a home turf, really, does it? I think churches in this country and presumably elsewhere are looking for ways to support Christians in the Holy Land and the countries nearby, and certainly the Anglican Church, which is based in that region, works very hard to make links with churches elsewhere.
Well, finally, let's come back to an area of real contretemps and concern, that is the interface between science and religion. This week, upset in both camps, as the Templeton Prize, one of the richest prizes in the world, a prize for progress in religion, goes to a non-believer, Martin Rees, the Astronomer Royal. Religious people upset, money going to a non-believer, scientists upset that a man of no faith takes money from a religious institution.
Yes, well, I've heard people wondering why he took the prize, and I think the fact that it's £1 million probably answers that question.
I hear he's going to donate it to the Humanist Society.
I hadn't heard that. That's interesting. yes, we talked to him before the prize was announced publicly, and I mean, he is a churchgoer. He regularly attends Evensong at Trinity in Cambridge. He describes the traditions of the Anglican Church as the customs of my tribe. He says he continues to be inspired by the music, liturgy, and architectural tradition of the Anglican Church in which I was brought up. So
takes us back to where we began, really, doesn't it?
Yes, I mean, he talks about being uplifted by the religion he encounters. This is very much the dilemma of Anglicanism, and I mean, I tend to be a blur of boundaries. I mean, I don't see Christianity as something with very. I always remember Archbishop Habgood talked about the way that we ought to concentrate at the core of our faith rather than the edges of it, and certainly in England and well, in anywhere with the Church of England or an Anglican Church, they're used to very blurred edges, and I mean, he is in the blur. I think it is a prize for religion and science. I think it's good that there's a religious organisation values good science. So on that score, I'm on their side. It would be a travesty if they gave it to a firm churchgoer whose science was not up to scratch. And I think we'll see some more reaction to this one over the next few days.
Paul Handley, great to talk to you. Thanks for being with us on Sunday night.
It's a pleasure.